Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm delighted to be here with you this evening. Last week we had a powerful show. I'm so excited to have our co-host back, but last week we had Carla Holloway, who wrote A Day in My Life. So those of you that missed Carla last week and a week before, please go to the website from Blog Talk Radio /Soul Topics, and you will be able to listen to those two shows on demand. And we have Shirley Carter Powell back with us tonight. Shirley, how are you?
I am great. How are you? And it's good to be back. And so glad to hear that you had a great show last week. I know the week before with Carla, you know, it was powerful. So your listeners, if they were tuned in, I know they had a treat. Just listening to her and her telling her story and being transparent is a powerful, powerful story to tell. So thank you, and I'm glad to be back.
Yes, those of you that missed us last week, I announced that Shirley got married last weekend and the weekend before, and I was privileged to facilitate the wedding. So, Shirley, your new name is Powell.
Yes. It's Shirley M. Carter hyphen Powell. So I am a Powell now.
Okay. It's so exciting to know that you've joined the marriage clan.
It's a beautiful thing.
Are you still traveling?
I am. I am still, as I say, honeymooning, but, you know, took a break to do the show, but we are still mobile, as I want to say, is that we're not back. We're enjoying some downtime right now at our second home, so I will have two homes. So we're still just away from all the work and all the daily hassles and things, and we're just kind of hibernating and just, you know, taking one day at a time and no time clocks, you know, no clock set, nothing like that. Just if we feel like going somewhere, we do. If we don't, you know, we just enjoy that one-on-one time.
Well, basically, it's good to be grown.
Yes. Oh, yes.
We're grown folks. But tonight's show, we're going to talk about pain to purpose. And I know you and I have been through a lot of situations in our life and experienced a lot of pain. And October's closing out Domestic Violence and Cancer Awareness Month. But just because the month end does not mean that the battle is over. It is a continual battle that we face each and every day. Carla and I talked about the statistics last week as it relates to domestic violence. It used to be 1 in 4 women were victims of domestic violence. Now it's raised to 1 in 3. So it is a rising epidemic, and the more we face financial disparity in our homes, the more domestic violence will exist, the more jobs that are lost, the more illness that attacks families. And I know you're a survivor of cancer, so Shirley, we didn't get a chance to talk and hear your story, but can you give our listening audience a brief testimony of where you came from to where you are now as we start off the show from pain to purpose?
The journey, and I call it a journey because a lot of time we go through life and we take life for granted. And when I look back over the years and where I came from to where I'm at now, from everything from growing up as a child in teenage years and all the, as I call them, roadblocks, or I don't want to even call them roadblocks, all the bumps in the road that I had to overcome, everything from substance abuse to drug abuse. But I think my personally, my biggest challenge was surviving breast cancer. Being that I had such a heavy family history of it, I still was not, you know, physically or emotionally prepared until it hit me. And I had no choice but to get in prepared mode. In other words, I call it survivor mode, the fight mode. And I, you know, I said I've been a fighter all my life. And with that, when the breast cancer came upon me, I was only 39 years old. I had just gotten married then. It was within a year of my marriage, I developed breast cancer. So, you know, being a new bride in a new environment and starting a new life and everything, and then all of a sudden get hit with the diagnosis that you have breast cancer, and you got two young sons that are looking at you like, oh my God, what now? You moved so far away from our family, and now you're diagnosed with breast cancer? So my diagnosis came upon me. I found my own. I went for my normal mammograms and all of that, and they, you know, got my little blue card in the mail. You're fine. We'll see you in a year, you know, because I go every year. And knowing that I had something inside of me that was painful, it was like I had a screwdriver in my chest and it was twisting. And the more it twists, the more it hurts. That pain hit me in the wee hours in the morning. I was asleep, and it was so intense that it woke me up. And all I could do was grab my chest, you know, I grabbed my breast and tried to, you know how you try to grab something to hold it to stop the pain? Well, it wouldn't stop. And I slid out of the bed on my knees and I began to pray. And I began to talk to the Lord in the wee hours of the morning with tears rolling down my face saying, you know, what is this? Is this what I think it is? You know, and I got a sense of calm in the midst of that. A calmness came over me, and I went into this mode. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to call the doctor. I got to get another mammogram. Someone has got to listen to me. And I got rejected. First, they didn't want to do a mammogram. Then I came in for a physical exam, and only to be told to go to another doctor for an exam, and then only for him to tell me, your mammogram didn't show anything, you know, last month, so I think you just need to wait till next year and we'll see this again. Your mother didn't have it, so you should be fine. And that was his last words to me until I said, you didn't read my history. You don't know me. You don't know my family. So I asked to be transferred, my case to be transferred to another doctor. And I found a doctor in the phone book. Never met him before in my life, didn't know anything about him. I got that phone book and I said, you know, I got to find someone, Lord. You got to help me. And I picked this doctor. I went to him. And I had to type for insurance where you have to have a referral. So I went to him and everything. I got my diagnosis from him. He first did a needle aspiration and then he did a surgical one. Sure enough, I had breast cancer. I was diagnosed with breast cancer August the 1st, 1995. By August the 21st, I was in surgery having my breast removed. Now, all of this took place like in 21 days from diagnosis to removal. And to have one have a lumpectomy on the right breast and the left breast removed, only to go back a year later to have the right one removed when they would not remove it at the same time. Took my chemo. I was put on a 6-month regimen. After 3 rounds, I could not do the 4th round. I ended up with heart damage so bad, to this day, I am walking around with a defibrillator. It was a case of where I had a relative to die, and I went into panic mode because I was dealing with some of the same symptoms that she was having, and she died 2 days before my 4th chemo appointment. I went in, I told him, I can't do it. They tried to convince me that I was different from her. I should go on and take it. We're two different people. And I said, all our symptoms are the same. So they sent me for a MUGA scan, only to find out that had I taken the 4th round, I would have coded and died the same way she died. A heart attack.
Wow.
So it was emotionally very draining. Because to get my second breast removed, the doctors denied me because, again, the mammogram showed no signs of breast cancer. But the same pain was there, but more intense in the right breast. I had to revert back to the days of working in mental health. And I was the person who helped patients get their insurance company to cover their treatment for substance abuse. So I reverted back to that. I told them I was homicidal and suicidal. So with that being said, my doctor had to refer me to a psychologist who in turn wrote a no harm contract of which we sent to the insurance company. And upon receiving that, they approved my surgery to have my right breast removed, only to find out not only had the cancer come back, but it was much more aggressive than the first round. And due to the fact of being a patient with now heart disease, you know, and got diagnosed with congestive heart failure because of the chemo, I was not able to take chemo in the second round. So what I had to do was have the surgery and rely on prayer because I couldn't even take radiation. I couldn't even take the pill because my receptors were negative. So I had no other choice but to only to hold on to my faith and believe that God would heal my body without any chemo, radiation, or any tamoxifen, you know, the other pills that they take. Only that was the only resource I had other than the surgery. And that was in 1996. So 21 years ago, I've been cancer-free since.
Wow, that's awesome, and it's incredible, too, because had you listened to the diagnosis that the doctor gave you, you would have went home, and then cancer would have riddled your body, and you would be out of here. So the message to those that are listening in who are not sure or have some uneasiness in their spirit concerning their bodies, what would you say to them?
What I say to people through my nonprofit, which I start was Against All Odds for breast cancer survivors and those that are going through, is that know your body. Listen to your body. People have to understand, men and women, you know your body better than any doctor. So you know what feels right and what doesn't feel right. Don't second guess yourself. Find someone that would listen to you. And if they find nothing, they find nothing. I'd rather err on the side of safety and precaution than to ignore it from someone who doesn't even know me. I don't care if he does have a degree to be a doctor. Because, you know, in a class of graduates, there's always that one that finished at the top, and then there's that one that finished at the bottom. Somebody got to bring in the back door. So know your body. And keep talking till you find someone that will listen to you. And know that with your insurance carriers, that they work for you because you can change carriers anytime. So when you know what your position is, then you have more power than you know because that knowledge is power. So when you exercise your right, and they know when you know, because they will back up. They will back up, back down, whichever way you want to put it, they will do it, and that you can get it done. If they say, well, our policy is this, every policy was written by somebody, and there's always someone that can overrule that policy. So never give up, never stop talking, and never stop reading and researching for yourself. And listen to your body. Don't ignore it. The body gives us warning signs. Pain is not normal. Pain, there's always an under. Something is under that pain. So when you take a pain pill or something like that, the only thing you're doing is masking the problem. Sooner or later, you're going to have to get to the problem, or the problem could take you out of here. So know that pain is not normal. Find out what it is, and you can manage your pain. There's not a cure for everything. But there's no such thing as you cannot manage it and live a more productive life. But you have to know what you're dealing with. So get to the bottom of it. But never stop talking and never stop asking questions. No questions are a dumb question. It's the ones that you don't ask. That's dumb.
Thank you so much for the advice. This past weekend, we hosted Les Brown's training at his institute, and I was telling some of the participants there a little bit about my story of domestic violence, that I've been married for 19 years to a minister, and 17 of those years were domestic violence. And I started thinking that had I not gone through that situation, I would not be standing before them on stage, and that's why I thought about the topic for this week, From Pain to Purpose, because we go through situations in our life and we don't know why we're going through it, and in the midst of going through it, it seems so overwhelming that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, and we become like kind of gripped with fear because we fear the unknown. We fear where we are, but in my situation, when my husband leaped at me for the last time to put his hands on me, my children stood before me and blocked him from hitting me, and it was then that the scales came off my eyes, and I decided not to take any more. I rose up in my power, not knowing fully what my purpose was, but I knew that after 17 years of the same old thing, mentally I was exhausted. Physically, I had enough bones broken and bruises that I knew I didn't want to go through it then. I feared my present more than I feared my future. So that caused me to create a paradigm shift in my thinking. And I said I didn't know what tomorrow was going to hold, but I just knew that I wanted to get out of that situation. And I wound up being homeless with my four children sleeping on a mattress. And it was hard. It was rough. And in the midst of that turmoil, in the midst of going through that, I knew it had to be more. And I know, Shirley, that while you were going through your transition and in the hospital, I knew that when my fight, in the midst of that fight, that battle that I was going through at that time, that I was going to win, because one of the things my father always said to me is, you're a fighter, you can do anything. And I kept hearing that in my subconscious that caused me not to give up. Did you hear any voices talking to you, Shirley, when you were going through your chemo and following the fact that you had other things going on besides the cancer that I'm sure you'll share with the audience if time permits, but I have another guest that I want to bring on. But did you think about anything else or your next while you were in that hospital room?
I did a lot, not only in the hospital room. I knew that I was in for the battle of my life, and only thing that I could, one of the main thing and main people, and my mother spirit was like that voice inside of me telling me I could do it, that she would walk me through it. Now, granted, my mother died when I was 18 years old, but her spirit was so strong with me that during my battle, even when the battle, when I sit alone in the room taking chemo, I was married, but the husband I had then, he never saw me hooked up for chemo. He would drop me at the curb and come back and get me when the nurse would call him that I'm done. He would still not get out of the car and walk up and walk me down. They would walk me out to the car. So there was a lot going on. There was abuse in the marriage, new marriage, and abuse and going through chemo for cancer. But there was that inner voice inside of me, and I felt it was my mom's spirit. And I even had visions of her when I would be laying in my bed crying. And it was like she was there to comfort me and say, it's going to be okay. You can do this. There were many days that I felt myself in a fetal position, just bawling, wondering what was going to happen to my children, two young boys. But I found that strength. I had a friend to send me a song by John P. Key, "When You've Done All You Can Do and Just Stand." And I began to listen over and over to different words and things from praise teams, everything from John P. Key to Marvin Sapp when he was with Commission, to Donnie McClurkin, to Yolanda Adams. I found strength inside of listening to gospel music, the words penetrating into my soul to help me, to give me strength to bear. And I'm telling you, my job closed out on me. It was like my whole world was falling apart while I'm going through chemo. My marriage was going down the tube, quick, fast, and in a hurry. My job closed out on me while I was out. I was on a medical, but they said I was out more than 90 days. They did not have to hold my position. I had no idea they had closed my position until I got a phone call from the insurance carrier. My 401k asked me, did I want to roll it over? What was I going to do with it? And I'm like, I'm going back to work as soon as, you know, I get through all of this. They said, no, sweetheart, they closed your position out. 92 days out. Yes. They close you.
Wow.
So that was another blow. So it was, you know, yes, there's a voice that comes through inside of you, and you hear it and it gets strong. The weaker you get, the stronger you get when you hear that voice, because it makes you fight. It makes you stand. And it makes you know that this too will pass and that I will survive. Now, you're talking about someone that ended up filing for a divorce, had no income. I had to put him out because he became so abusive. And this was after the second round of chemo. I mean, the second round of cancer. It got so crazy in the marriage that, you know, he decided to get physical with me. And I've been there, done that with my first husband. And I said, never, ever again will I allow myself to be a punching bag for anyone. So I decided to fight back with the pen and pad. And I wrote. And I wrote a letter to the prosecutor, to the judge. And that's how I, you know, became free from that situation. I decided to write. Mm. And I wrote it down, and then it happened so fast. I called an attorney, and after he read, he said, you need to take this to down here to the prosecutor's office. And I took it down there, and then he said, well, you need to get this to the judge. He may read it, and he may get back with you next week or whatever. And I'm like, I don't have next week. All I have is today. And that judge, it hit his desk. His secretary gave it to him. Before he went to lunch, he saw it and signed it within hours. I was able to get a PPO and remove him from the house. Now, you think, now, I had no job. no other source of income coming in, but I knew I could make it. And I did, because I went into that mode of survivorship, and I knew that I had talent. Other than working for corporate America, I started doing daycare, from just watching his sister's children to opening my own daycare in my home, then starting my sweet shop, and never looked back. Never missed a mortgage payment. And I,
yes,
it was painful, but my purpose.
Yeah, women are very resilient when it comes to fighting, especially when you have children involved. It just seems like a new strength comes upon us, like the Incredible Hulk. We'd be like, okay, it's time to rise up. So I can definitely identify with that, because I'm telling you, the life that I'm living and the things that I'm doing now, I had no idea these things were possible. You know, we're all one person away from a breakthrough, and Les Brown was my breakthrough over 20 years ago. After I found the courage to put my husband out, lock those doors, I didn't have any money. He closed the bank accounts, took all the money, and we lost our home, and he went on and set up a new life, and I had nothing, the children had nothing, but I had me. I knew I had the ability to generate wealth because I was talented in a lot of things, and we have to supply for the demand. I, just like you looked around and said, okay, I don't know what's up, what I'm going to do, but you bake. I mean, you're a phenomenal baker. I guess that's how you got Mr. Powell, and you're a great cook. So, you know, but me, I did, I was doing marketing and consulting, and I bumped into Mr. Brown, and he said he needed the services that I provided. And then the rest is history. I had the opportunity of meeting this phenomenal young lady this weekend. Her name is Elisa. Elisa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you, dear heart?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am good. Shirley, I met her at the Institute training this week in the certification program, and we had several people that told their stories, and being that this is Domestic Violence, we're going to have her back to be more in depth with her story. But could you tell us a little bit about who you are? Introduce yourself to the listening audience, please. And keep in mind that you're global as you're speaking.
Of course. My name is Elisa Rajkitkul. I currently live in Los Angeles, and I'm a journalist. I currently freelance, but prior to this, I was working as part of the White House Press Corps, and I traveled with the White House Press Corps during the Obama administration. And I see myself changing lives and, you know, being a speaker and being able to help women and girls all over who don't have a voice, because that's, once upon a time, that's who I was.
And tell us a little bit about your story, but as I said, we're going to bring you back so that we can get more in depth. But we were talking about domestic violence and cancer, because we're closing out the month with that. But you came out of a traumatic situation, and how did that pain thrust you into your purpose right now?
So I was engaged at the age of 12. I lived in a community in a culture where women are submissive, and, you know, the only thing that they're seen as are to make babies and to take care of the men in the family. And so when I was 12, I was engaged to a man I didn't know. I was married at 17 and molested for years by his uncle, who is a religious leader of this cult that I was raised in. It's been a journey, like you said. You know, we'll talk about the details another day, but it's been a journey, and I just know that if I hadn't gone through everything I went through and being married for 12 years and going through all of that suffering, if I hadn't gotten out of it, I wouldn't have the strength, I wouldn't have the compassion, I wouldn't have the will. And the reason I want to do this is because I don't want to see anybody else in pain. I don't want to, I can't see anybody else go through the things I went through, because I know how much it hurts and I know how bad it feels. So, but yeah, I mean, like you said, our kids are the ones who give us our strength. When my son turned 11, I started having nightmares because we still lived in the same community and, you know, we still lived in the same cult, and I could not stand to even think of my son going through what I went through, and I didn't want him to be raised in that way, and I didn't want him to grow up as a man who did not respect women. So that was one of the biggest, he's my biggest pillar of strength. That is pretty much what made me decide one day that enough is enough, and I need to either save myself and my son, or we're just going to die here.
I said that we're one person away from a breakthrough. Who was your breakthrough person that said that, that spoke into your life, that gave you the courage to know that you could be free?
Truthfully, it was Les Brown. Believe it or not, I went to a seminar.
Oh, really?
In Sacramento, California. And I'd never heard a motivational, inspirational speaker before. I was raised very religious, so everything that we watched or listened to was very monitored. It was all just, you know, religious prayers, which I didn't understand because it was in Punjabi, but a lot of it is very, like, poetic, so Shakespearean. So I didn't really understand a lot of it. And so I went to Les Brown's seminar, and this is the first time I hear someone saying, you know, you can be whatever you think, you can achieve your dreams, you know, whatever you think is what will become of you. And I started listening to him every day after that. And you know how they say, once you make up your mind, God sends people into your lives who help you.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
And so I met this woman, and it's a funny story because I met her at European Wax Center. She was my waxer. And she, you know, we was the first time I went in, and she asked me about my story, trying to make me comfortable. And so I started telling her I was married, and, you know, we started talking, and she invited me on a cruise with her and her friends for her birthday. And I looked at her and I was like, that sounds amazing, but I won't be allowed to go. And she looked at me and she was like, allowed? What are you talking about? How old are you? And I was like, I'm 28. So she's like, you're 28 years old, girl. What do you mean by you're not allowed to go? And so I kind of went a little bit into, you know, my culture and, you know, women, how women in my culture are not allowed to go out. And so we became friends, and she believed in me. She said a few things that I think the most powerful thing she ever said to me was, do you understand who you are? Do you know your strength? Do you see your power? And do you see how beautiful of a woman you are? You live in America, girl. In America, you can do whatever you want. And oh my gosh, that was a seed. That seed grew. It definitely grew. And after her, you know, I feel like God just sent angels into my life that helped make me happen. Because I know when I told my father, I called my dad and I was like, Daddy, I can't do this anymore. You know, I can't be in this relationship anymore. And my dad said, if you leave him, you're dead to us. And my dad was like, does he hit you? Does he beat you? And if he doesn't, you don't need to leave him. And so there was just no way for me to try to explain to my father, who was so deep in this cult, that it was a very toxic relationship, you know. So when I left,
wow,
I pretty much lost.
So, Alisa, question.
Yes.
So they didn't practice physical abuse. in your culture, they just did sexual abuse.
Yeah, I mean, I was molested
for
years.
Did you tell your father about that?
No, I did not, because my father looks at him like he's God, and I was at a place in my mind where I was fearful. And to tell you the truth, I didn't believe it myself. I grew up believing that he was God, and so, you know, when I was little, and that's when it started, he called me into his room one day and told me that he could see my destiny and that I was a sinner, and whatever he's going to be showing me or doing is him washing away my sins. And I believed him.
Wow.
He told me I was loved and I was special, and that, you know, it was from a past life, but that because he cares for me, he will wash away my sins. And it started when I was so young that I believed him. I believed him until I started going counseling when I was 32 years old. That was when it finally came out. I didn't even know how to talk about it. I think I just tried to suppress it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started
talking
about it, you know, I just knew. It changed my life. It changed my life. I just knew, like, this cannot be going on anymore. There has to be a reason why I went through this, you know. So I feel like my purpose in life right now is to help women, to help girls, to make sure that nobody else goes through all the crazy things that I went through, you know. And that's what I look at my life to be.
Well, what I'm going to do is bring you back to the show, not this weekend, but the following weekend, Tuesday, because we have a huge audience in Africa, South Africa, China, Japan, and London, as well as here in the U.S., and I know that the ladies would be so liberated to hear your story, to know that there's hope, because I get emails all the time from people, you know, that they're always glad to hear testimonials of women that made it, because it becomes a beacon of light for them to know that there's endless possibilities that they can walk. It's just that they don't have the courage. You know, when I was going through my situation with domestic violence, I didn't know what options I had. So I stayed in a situation because I didn't know what to do. There were no options. There were no, you didn't talk about it. Domestic violence is not something you talk about because it's not really supposed to happen. So you find yourself just, you know, living in fear and isolation and being humiliated on a regular basis because you're too embarrassed to talk about is what's going on with you. And people look on the outside and everything looks normal, but the turmoil inside, mm-hmm. that's why so many people commit suicide because of depressions, because they don't know how to communicate the pain. They don't know how to communicate what's hurting, what's going on in their soul, and their minds are so confused with what's right and what's wrong. And I know one of the things I had was looking at my husband and looking at things were going on so perfect, so well with him, and here I was struggling, going through, trying to make it just to the next day. And it was hard. It was rough. And I didn't know what to do. So there are people that don't know how to do, don't know how to escape, and I want you to come back and be able to share that and some pointers that individuals can take, because I know it wasn't an easy thing to do, to walk away from something that you knew all your whole life, and to be open to possibilities of freedom and being able to go and come as you please and to travel and work with the White House. I mean, it's just a phenomenal story and testament to what's possible.
Thank you so much. I would definitely be honored to come back. You know, I told myself that the day I found my voice, I vowed I would never be silent again. There's so many women and there's so many people, so many girls who think that they don't have an option and that, you know, there's nothing, that if they leave, they won't have anyone. But I think what we don't realize is we're all here to help. And once you make that decision, you know, a higher power comes in and takes care of you.
It indeed
and
does.
I can say that because I've lived it. I thought I would not have anyone. And all of a sudden, here are all of these strangers who I'd never met in my life, you know, offering me help.
Well, it's just the beginning because the best is still to come. And, yeah, it's going to be rough sometimes, but you shall rise in the fullness of your purpose because it is part of your destiny. And just like you said, that as you've been walking out your destiny, people have been coming to you, which supports that you are in alignment with the assignment that God has for your life.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so Shirley... Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions for Alisa?
One of the questions is that I had at such a young age, being engaged and then getting married. And I noticed you said your son. So you only have one child or more?
I only have one child.
Okay.
I got pregnant almost immediately after I got married when I was 17. And, you know, he's mm-hmm. my only son.
Well, I mean, you know, I really thank you for sharing your story, and I can't wait to hear more, and I'm quite sure our audience can't either, but to live in that lifestyle for so many years, and, you know, it just goes to show that when you don't know, and then when you gain the knowledge, then you gain some power. I mean, even no matter what situation you're in, whether it's dealing with cancer, domestic violence, it all goes back to finding your voice, getting the knowledge, and then knowing that you can survive, even though you don't know what tomorrow is going to look like for you. But you stepped out, and you took control of your life. And I think that's wonderful. And can you stand and tell the story today and to hear you say, I've found my voice, and now that I've found it, no one can stop me from speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you,
Shirley. Wow, that is powerful. I have a guest scheduled for next week. I'm going to see if I can switch him to the following week and bring you on. So I'll let you know. So listening audience, please stay tuned because this is going to be powerful and it is going to transform many of your lives. I'm going to take questions or comments for some of our listening audience and see if anybody have questions or comments. Please press 1 and I will put you in queue. Press 1 and I will put you in queue. Call it 2175. You are live.
Hi, everybody. This is Marie. Thank you so much. I sure appreciate this because, you know, this is something that we all need. And as she said, especially the young ladies, because they don't know how secretive their body is, and the young men also. But I tell you, I've gone through cancer like Shirley have. I've also gone through being molested and all this kind of things. And I'm still not able to really talk about a whole lot of it. It's not easy. A lot of people think that's easy, but it's not easy.
No, it's
not. And I've never gone to a psychiatrist or anything like that. I'm not really ready to really put it out because when I put it out, it's going to be a lot of hectic things that goes on within my family. So that's the reason why I haven't put it out, because my family want to be very secretive in a lot of ways. But I've lived with it. You know, I'm 64 years old now, and I've lived with it all my life, you know. But I just you know, I know I need a book. I need three books, one for my son, one for me, and one for and one for the marriages, you know, but hopefully I'll be able to do that, you know. But I'm just, I didn't get the part as to where that when you, your father, and when you left, what happened, you know. Thank you all so much. I love y'all, and you all have a good one now, and God bless, okay?
God bless
you
too,
so
Marie.
Much. Okay, Alyssa, she said that she didn't understand the shift of what happened after you told
mm-hmm.
your father you were going to leave. So I guess she wanted the question was probably, well, let me ask her what the question is.
Okay.
Hello, Marie. Could you ask the question directly or what it was you wanted to know?
When she said that her father didn't go along with her leaving him, and after she had left him, then you cut her off because she couldn't finish that part there. Congratulations,
okay.
Shirley.
Thank you.
Okay. So she wanted to know what happened after you told your father you were leaving.
So pretty much once I told my father, I was ambushed in my in the house where I was living with my husband. He called everybody in the community and, you know, they sent all of my uncles and aunts and everyone, because we were already living in America, and so he sent whoever was here to my house to make sure that I knew that that was not an option. So I came home from work one day, and I was pretty much ambushed. I remember being yelled at a lot. I, at that time, gave up hope. That's all I can say. I went up to my room, and I slept, and that's kind of what I do when I get depressed. I gave
up
hope.
Did they physically attack you?
No, it was there. It was just a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming and threatening that if I did leave, you know, I would never see my son again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just went with the flow until I made a decision. I think it was a month later, I spoke to another one of my friends and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I don't know what to do. I'm scared for my life. I'm scared for my son. And so she took me to her attorney. And that's kind of what helped. I spoke to the attorney. We filed, you know, I don't remember what it's called, but where they can't, a restraining order where they can't have my son leave the country. Because my son is a dual citizen, and so I was scared that, you know, if I have one passport, what if he's in Thailand, which is where I was born, and is able to get a second passport and takes my son and leaves the country, I would never see him again. But they were able to file a restraining order, and I think it all comes to faith. Like, I just knew that I had to do whatever I had to do. I just couldn't stay in here any longer because I did not want my son to go through that. I did not want my son to be raised in that way. I did not want. And so I had a 2-hour span because I did have my in-laws live in the house with me. And my mother-in-law was on her way to the airport to India for a wedding. And my brother-in-law and his wife who lived with us drove her to the airport, and I had those 2 hours, and I called my friend. She came over to my house. We packed a few of my things, and I pretty much ran away and never looked back. You know, I got an apartment an hour away and switched cars with my friend so that, you know, if they hired a private investigator, they wouldn't recognize the car. And I changed my phone number, and I had so many locks on my apartment door. I was scared every day for 6 months. I got so many threatening emails, and, you know, I just kept going. I just kept going.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to hear your full story. So we have to get you back quickly. I'm sure I'll be getting a lot of emails and text messages saying, when is she coming back? What happened to this and what happened to that? But... you know, the show tonight is From Pain to Purpose, and we want to bring you back so you can talk about your purpose and how you know that you'll be able to impact not only just women, but men as well, too, because we have men that are being held captive mentally in relationships that have stopped them from being and progressing to be the person that God ordained and called them to be. So thank you so much for joining in with us tonight, Alisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. So Shirley, I tell you, you see, she just whetted our whistle a little bit.
Yes. I mean, what an amazing story. And I know it's just, as you say, just the tip of the iceberg, because, you know, now, you know, when radio is always theater in the mind, and my mind is just going and to hear that, you know, she only had a couple hours. And sometimes we look at that couple hours as, you know, depends on what you do in a long time, but when you are uprooting your life in 2 hours, and in that 2 hours you have to get what you can and get to a safe place. That's a lot going on for 2 hours. And to be able to do it and maintain your sanity while you're doing it with a child with you too, as you gather everything and not knowing if somebody's going to come back, they forgot something or what happened. You know, because when you only have a couple hours, you don't know if somebody, they're going to turn around and come back or someone else is going to show up. But she was able to, you know, uproot her life and her child and get to safety in 2 hours. So I'm looking forward to her coming back to give us more. And, you know, that so many people could be helped just by her story alone, because so many people feel like they never have any alone time where they could make a move or do something or make a change. And then for her, after all of that, to go into therapy, because so many people don't go into therapy either. They live
right
with it, but it takes courage. So know that it's not easy. Whenever you make whatever major move you make in your life, life-altering move, whether you inflict it yourself or someone inflicts it on you, but you have to take control and make that next move, it is not an easy move. And don't let anyone tell you that it is, and especially when you have a child or children in tow, because not only are you looking out for your life, but you got to protect their lives too. So it's, you know, I commend her for her tenacity, her focus, and the fact is that she, you know, went from all that pain, and now she's walking in her purpose. That's awesome. That is awesome.
Thank you so much. And I want to encourage our listening audience to visit my website, FromTheSoulOfAWoman.com. There you will see my upcoming event, December 16th. It is called Rise as a Phoenix, and my special guest will be Deborah King, Jose and Andrea Flores, Dr. J.R. Thinklin, Mary Wannan, Eula Murray, and Marie Cosgrove. And some of the topics will be indispensable love, recovering from you, next level motivation, health talk. And we have a signature rap session that we do at each one-day retreat, because we know that the men have issues and the women have issues, but we do rap sessions separately so that we can talk real talk and talk about what's going on in our lives and hopefully come to a solution, so that when you go back home, you will be free of some of the baggage that you brought to the event. And then we close out with an old school party. It's December 16th, so it's going to be an old school Christmas party. And that way we can decompress and have fun and go back, refresh, and renew. So that is December 16th, and you can go to FromTheSoulOfAWoman.com to find out more information about that and how you can register. The total price for the day session plus the old school party is $100 and $169 for couples. So I'm excited, and thank you all for joining and tuning in. We have one more person I'm going to let give a comment or question. Caller 7570, you're live.
Oh, I'm Ray Broussard in Dallas. I just wanted to say I admire that young woman. And all of you all, for which you had more courage to do than I did. But I didn't put up with physical or sexual abuse, but the emotional abuse leaves the scars inside.
Yes.
And it stressed me so much. I got rheumatoid arthritis. And he started telling the kids I was putting on an act. There was nothing wrong with me. Because he had girlfriends, 20-year-old girlfriends in South America that he was supporting. So he had to put me down in every way he could, and he continued.
Wow.
And, so many
and did he wind up being with that person that he cheated on you with?
No. It was so many of them in South America and the United States. And Scotland, you name it.
Wow.
But,
so you wound up ultimately divorcing him?
No, when I decided to get a divorce, I already had rheumatoid arthritis and I couldn't get insurance. I lose my medical insurance and I couldn't buy any for any price. So I just stuck it out. And I moved his butt upstairs on a opposite side of the house. And I told him, I said, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't let the company know, but because I lose my insurance, and I appreciate if you continue helping me financially, but you can do whatever you please, but just don't talk to me. He said, can I use your car to go get cigarettes? That was his response.
Wow.
So,
well, we're going to have our guest back again, and then you can follow up and, you know, give questions or comments. And we can go from there, but my, oh, my, the things we do have to endure. But I promise you, if we're able to go through it, if we're all able to hold our sanity and stay focused on the end goal, that thing that we see in our imaginations about coming out and living an abundant life, if you can just hold on to that vision and press towards that mark, it shall come into manifestation, which is called your purpose. Thank you for tuning in and joining us for another Hot Topics from the Soul. Look forward to you joining us next Tuesday, same time, 8 p.m. If this show has been a blessing, please go visit the Blog Talk website, download it, and email it to a friend. Good night. God bless. Welcome back, Shirley. Thank you, Elisa,
thank
for sharing your story, and those have tuned in and had questions or comments. We're here because you're here. Good night and God bless.
Good night. God bless.